This is Old Time Radio Drama. I'm Norman Gilliland, and we'll have some comedy tonight in the form of The Baby Snooks Show with Eddie Cantor. Plenty of mystery tonight, one for Nero Wolfe to solve. We'll also have a case from The Whistler. Philip Marlowe is on a case, and so will be Richard Diamond at about 10:30, starring, of course, Dick Powell. And along the way, more comedy from Groucho Marx and You Bet Your Life. We'll start with a broadcast from September 16, 1945, with Fanny Brice, famous in her role as Baby Snooks, created the role at a party in 1921 and bowed out eventually, so that Snooks fails to come home in one story and various guests help to search for her. That was one device that worked pretty well on radio. Well, tonight we have guest Eddie Cantor and The Baby Snooks Show from September 16th of 1945.
Sanka is the coffee that lets you sleep. But now, wake up! It's time for The Baby Snooks Show. Yes, it's the Baby Snooks Show, which will star Fanny Brice as Baby Snooks with Hanley Stafford as Dashiell, guest of the day, Eddie Cantor, and brought to you by Sanka Coffee, the coffee that's 100% flavor-rich, so you'll always enjoy it, and 90% caffeine-free, so it will never interfere with sleep. It is late afternoon in the Higgins household in Sycamore Terrace, and Baby Snooks has not come home from school. Daddy and Mommy are frantic with worry. Daddy has been making a tour of the town in search of Snooks, and he's just now coming in the house.
Is that you, Lancelot?
Yes, dear. Did Snooks come home?
No. Didn't you find her anywhere?
Not a trace. I went to the park, the drugstore, the movie theater.
What was playing?
What's that got to do with it? It was called Flaming Passion. Snooks wouldn't be interested in seeing that.
Oh, no. No, of course not. She's already seen it four times.
Well, I don't know where else to look for her.
Did you try the bakery shop?
Bakery shop?
Yes. Mr. Schultz tells me she often goes in there and feels the coffee cake.
I should have thought of that.
Take your feet off that chair.
Oh, yes, dear. Say, do you think she could be at the public library?
No, I doubt it. Isn't her library card in that big book there?
Oh, yes. My, what did she take this book out for? A critical analysis of pre-Renaissance Gothic architecture. Now, what did she take out a big book like that for?
It makes more spitballs.
Oh, what's the matter with that kid?
Well, remember, you're her father. Watch your ashes.
Oh, yes, dear. Doesn't she know that's public property? I'll just wait till she comes home.
Oh, I wish she would come home.
Well, don't you worry, dear. She'll show up. I have Uncle Louie and Aunt Sophie out hunting for her. This isn't the first time she's been late.
But not this late. An ice cream for dinner, and she hasn't done anything naughty.
Nothing that we know of.
Maybe that's Snooks.
It's Uncle Louie. Don't slam the door.
Remember the picture. Hang the picture up again, Lancelot.
Yes, dear.
A cardboard house.
Any news, Uncle Louie?
Oh, not a thing. My bookie skipped town.
Oh, we don't care about the races.
Oh?
Didn't you go to the police station?
Oh, yes, that I did. I didn't think you knew.
Oh, please, Uncle Louie. Please tell us what happened.
Oh, it was nothing. I pleaded guilty and they let me off with a small fine.
Small fine?
Yeah.
I sent you to the police station to find out about Snooks.
Well, so you did, but how do you like that? The low-down cheats took my check without batting an eye. I'll sue them if that check turns out to be good.
Oh, a lot of help you've been.
Oh, what about Snooks?
A great little girl. Great.
Louie, try to be sensible. Don't you realize Snooks is gone?
How did you ever arrange it?
Oh. Maybe something terrible has happened. Can't you think where she might be?
Let me see. I have it. I'll go look in the pool parlor at the corner.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. What would she be doing at the pool parlor?
Well, you know Snooks. Maybe she's behind the eight ball again.
Oh.
I'll go down and see. Goodbye, folks.
Louie, don't slam the door.
Oh. Hang the picture up again, Lancelot.
Yes, dear.
Well, answer the phone, Lancelot.
Oh, yes, dear. Hello?
Hello, Lancelot, dear boy.
It's Aunt Sophie. Did you find out anything, Aunt Sophie?
About Snooks? No. The most unfortunate thing happened. I fainted.
Uh-huh. In front of whose mansion?
The Van Peisters. And you'll never guess what.
They just happened to be having a big, swanky party.
Well, however did you know?
Well, last week you sprained your ankle and they had to carry you into the Kensington's tea dance, Aunt. The week before, you had a sunstroke.
Now, never mind. They just happen to be unfortunate accidents.
Why don't you forget your phony social aspirations? After all, we both know you used to be a waitress in a hash house.
Why, Lancelot, that is merely a figment of your imagination.
All right. Forget about it, Aunt Sophie. Just bring me some hotcakes.
One stack of wheat's coming up! Lancelot, for shame. How can you resort to such low-down trickery? A fine way to treat a weekend guest. I did you tout jours.
Weekend guest. Since when is it 3 years from Friday to Monday?
Lancelot.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear. It's just that I'm so upset about Snooks. Well, I'm going to do something practical right now. I'm going over to the radio station. Eddie Cantor's doing a program. Maybe he'll broadcast an appeal about Snooks.
Okay, Mr. Cantor, we're ready for your number.
All right, thank you, fellas. Now, remember, Union, I go back on the air with my program September the 26th. It's only 10 days away. Now, let's run over. I'm going to love that gal. Make it good, huh? I'm going to love that gal like she's never been loved before. I'm going to show that gal she's the baby that I adore. When she's in my arms again, our dreams will all come true. Then the years between might never have been. We'll start our lives anew. I'm going to kiss that gal like she's never been kissed before. And though I miss that gal, she's the baby I'm waiting for. We'll never part again. She'll hold my heart again forever and nevermore. I'm gonna love that gal like she's never been loved before.
Sister, I can hardly wait. Feel my heart palpitate. We'll never part again. She'll hold my heart again forever and nevermore. I'm gonna love that gal. I'm gonna kiss that gal. I'm gonna love that gal like she's never been loved
before. That's good, boys. That's fine.
Oh, excuse me, sir.
Yeah.
I'm Lancelot Higgins. Do you run this studio?
Run the studio? If I ran it, do you think I'd let myself get away with the things I get away with? I'm Eddie Cantor.
Oh, well, Mr. Cantor, I came here for help.
Well, I get pleasure out of helping people. What is your trouble?
My little daughter is lost.
I see. Would you like to borrow one of mine?
Oh, no, no.
Take your choice. There's Marilyn and Marjorie. There's Janet.
Listen,
there's Edna. I can go on like this for days, you know.
I just want my own dear little Snooks.
I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Higgins. An only child, no doubt?
I have three others. How many children have you?
I don't know. When I left home this morning, Ida wasn't...
How?
Mr. Higgins, I've been in the maternity ward so often they served me aspirin with my monogram on it. So you see, I'm in a position to give you some advice.
Oh, thank you.
You say you have four little girls, huh?
No, two of them are boys.
Boys. In that case, you can give me some advice.
Please, Mr. Cantor. I thought if only we could make some sort of radio appeal, we might find Snooks immediately.
Well, I'll speak to my announcer, Harry Von Zell. Maybe he could slip in the announcement with his commercial, huh?
Well, swell. I don't know how to thank you.
No need. Glad to do it. Now, let me take some notes on her appearance. What does your little girl look like?
Well, did you see Meet Me in St. Louis?
Oh, yes. You mean she looks like Margaret O'Brien?
No, Marjorie Maine.
And now she's lost.
Yes.
Let me be the first to congratulate you.
Oh, but you don't understand. I want to find her.
Well, everybody to his taste, but I warn you, the older they get, the harder they are to lose. That's what George Jessel told me. I'll tell you what I want to do. Anyhow, I'm pretty good at this sort of thing. When did you first notice that she was missing?
Well, not for quite a while. I was busy in my laboratory working on a new invention, a fuel substitute.
Really?
Yes. It's a powdery substance. You simply drop it in water and use it for gas.
What's it called? Salopatica? But seriously, why don't you take me home with you? Perhaps I can track her down for you.
Oh, no, I wouldn't ask you.
Let's be on our way. I want to meet your family.
Well, you asked for it.
Well, there they go, Wilcox. But I bet they'll never be able to find Snooks.
Well, Carmen Dragon, I suppose you could.
Oh, maybe. Remember how the Pied Piper of Hamelin called all the children to him with music?
Yeah.
Well, suppose I try to get Snooks that way. Listen.
All right. Come out, come out. Say, maybe you ought to use your musical influence on those grown-ups who are disturbed by the caffeine in the coffee they drink. You know what their first words are every morning, don't you? That's right. They never sleep a wink. The caffeine in their coffee keeps them awake. Now, if they'd drink Sanka coffee, they'd sing a different tune. Because Sanka coffee has had 97% of the caffeine taken out, so it can't interfere with sleep. And have you heard how wonderful Sanka coffee tastes? You bet it's good. Fragrant, delicious, roaster fresh, too. You'll never miss a wink of sleep, and you'll always enjoy every cup you drink of Sanka coffee. Carmen Dragon and his orchestra with June is busting out all over. We'll be right back.
Yes, dear?
Oh, Lancelot, I haven't heard a word about Snooks.
Well, I've got someone here who might help us. Dear, I'd like you to meet Eddie Cantor.
How do you do? Are you one of Snooks' little friends?
Madam, don't let my young appearance fool you. I'm old enough to be Snooks' brother. Older brother, oldest. Oh, ooh, ah.
Mommy, this is Eddie Cantor.
Who?
Oh, you know him. If you knew Susie and I know Susie. Oh, what a gal.
Oh, Lancelot. Lancelot, how can you act so stupid at a time like this?
Stupid? I've made a good living. Seriously, Mrs. Higgins. Mrs. Higgins, I came here to be of assistance. I want to do anything I can to help you find Snooks.
Oh, I've been racking my brain.
I noticed a funny sound here. Go ahead.
You know, just before you came in, I almost established contact with her.
What's that?
Oh, don't mind her, Eddie. She thinks she's psychic.
Well, don't scoff. It's perfectly possible. All women have a sort of a sixth sense.
They do.
Did you ever try to sneak in at 3 a.m. after a poker game?
I see what you mean.
Sure, they're all equipped with radar. I'm just kidding, Mrs. Higgins. You stay here and try to contact Snooks. And Mr. Higgins, would you show me the place where she was last seen?
All right, it was up in the twins' nursery. Come on,
let's go. Nice little house you've got here.
Well, it wasn't this nice when we bought it.
No?
We've made changes in a lot of the rooms. Here's the baby's nursery.
Baby's nursery? I bet you made a lot of changes in here, too.
I'd like to have a nickel for everyone I folded and pinned on those two babies.
Me too. I was as fast as lightning in my day. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but you're probably pretty rusty now.
Oh, I don't know. One doesn't lose a touch. Wouldn't be a bit surprised if I could beat you right now.
Bet you $10.
You're on.
You take one of the twins and I'll take the other.
Yeah.
Here's yours.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Mine would cry. Sure. This was a better idea than we thought.
Ready?
Ready.
All clear for action?
All clear.
Material unfolded.
Pin free and clear.
Go.
Roger. Once over, twice over.
Up we go,
under we go, left side, right side.
Hey, no pain.
What's the matter? What'd I do?
You can't do that. You forgot the powder.
Well, I always use the powder afterward.
After you've diapered them? How?
I leave an opening. That's how.
Quiet. Here comes Aunt Sophie.
Well, what's going on here?
Oh, we put daddies on the baby. Babies on the daddy.
Deedee's on the Bobby. If he said Bobby, I would have killed him.
Well, you both have a... Oh, say. Well, you both have a poor sense of direction. Look how high up you've got them. You've gagged the kids.
Well, we felt we could use a gag here.
Oh, he certainly is. This is Eddie Cantor.
What, the Eddie Cantor?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, Mr. Cantor. Why, I remember the first time I saw you.
What a memory. Really?
Yeah, sure. Why, you had been a star for years.
Years? Take it easy now.
Well, yes, I got in for half price.
Yeah, why? Were you in the service? I didn't know they had wax in the Civil War.
Mr. Cantor, I take back all the nice things I said about you. I bid you Avar Dupoy.
Dupoy on you too, too.
Well, Mr. Cantor, it's getting later and still no sign of Snooks.
Now, you say you last saw the child here in the nursery?
Oh, no. I didn't see her.
No?
The cook, Sunshine, was the last to see her.
Well, let me speak to her.
Well, I'll ask her if she'll see you.
You'll ask her. Tell her. Tell her I want to speak to her.
Evidently, you don't have help at your house.
Of course not. Not with six women in the house. I simply board each of them a carpet sweep, and I stand in the middle of the room and direct traffic.
Well, now, look. Why don't you tell me what you want to ask the cook, and I'll ask her while I'm doing the dishes tonight.
Don't tell me she makes you wash the dishes.
Oh, only takes a minute.
Yeah, but why do you have to do it? Why not your wife?
Well, who'd sit with the cook's child?
Of course. I never thought of that.
It's really not so bad. She gets every Thursday night off.
Who, the cook?
No, my wife.
Why do you let her get away with so much?
Well, cooks are hard to get. Besides, she can lick me.
Yeah, well, I'll be able to handle her. Come on, Higgins, to the kitchen. I'll see sometime. Is this the kitchen right here?
Mm-hmm.
Sunshine, I'd like a word with you.
Yeah?
That's the word. Goodbye.
Wait a minute. Sunshine, don't you know who this is? He's a famous radio comedian.
Oh, come right in, Mr. Hope.
No. This is Eddie Cantor.
Eddie Cantor. Well, come right in.
Oh, you like me, huh?
No, I just want to see how it feels to have ham in the kitchen again.
That's all. Let's get out of here, Higgins.
Wait, you said you were going to tell her off.
Don't be silly, Higgins. Why should I talk harshly to her? She might be somebody's father. Come on.
We'll resume our search for Baby Snooks in a few moments, but now we'd like to have you meet our young singing star of Paramount Pictures, Bob Graham, singing How Deep Is the Ocean.
What is in my heart? How can I measure each and every part? How can I tell you how much I love you? Just how much I do. How much do I love you? I'll tell you no lie. How deep is the ocean? How high is the sky? How many times a day do I think of you? How many roses are sprinkled with you? How far would I travel to be? From here to a star, and if I ever lost you, how much would I cry? How deep is the ocean? How high is the sky?
Again?
Well, I just thought...
Well, a
little refreshment for our guest.
If you mean that so-called radio comedian, no.
Oh, now. Look, I'll fix it. Let's see, now, where would the coffee be?
Not in the oven.
Oh, no. Of course not. Well, here we are. Sanka coffee.
What a coffee, Higgins.
What?
Why, Sank is the coffee that lets everybody sleep. It's got the caffeine taken out, that's why. You see, it's the caffeine in coffee, not the coffee itself, that robs so many people of sleep.
How did you get in here again, Wilcox?
Oh, I was just passing by the kitchen window when I heard you say Sank a coffee. And at once I said to myself, Wilcox, if you're half the man I think you are, you'll go right in there and see if Mr. Higgins has had any news about Snooks. So here I am,
huh.
And I...
Wouldn't be the Sanker.
Say, did you ever taste a coffee that could compare with it in richness and freshness and body? Why, a man would be mad to pass up a cup of Sanka coffee. But don't get me wrong. If I had to choose between Snooks and Sanka coffee...
There isn't any news of Snooks, Wilcox.
Oh, too bad. Well, I'll just finish up my coffee and go then. I know you'd rather be alone at a time like this, Higgins. So long. Now, back to our search for Baby Snooks.
Well, we've gone through the house, Mr. Campbell.
Are you sure you've told me everything, Higgins?
Everything I know.
And I've spoken to everybody in your family?
Everybody except Uncle Louis Groot.
Well, where is...
Here we are, back in the living room. Uncle Louis! Get out from under that sofa.
Well, all right. But if you weren't such a cheapskate, I wouldn't have to search for your cigars like a sneak thief.
If you'd buy your own, I wouldn't have to hide them all the time.
I choose to take that as an insult. I've got a good mind to pack up and leave.
Oh, yes?
Right after supper.
Who's your bug-eyed companion here?
Who's his? Bug-eyed?
Louis, that's no way to talk to a guest in my house. This is Eddie Cantor, and he's going to ask you a few questions.
Yeah. I got an alibi, mister. I was standing there minding my own business.
Wait a minute.
It was a nice conversation we had. Look, I'm not a detective. I just want to ask you a few amateur questions.
Oh, well, go ahead. I'll give you a few professional answers.
Being questioned is nothing new for Louis.
Well, don't worry. He won't outsmart me. What's your name?
Louis Groot.
Where were you born?
New Orleans.
How old are you?
55.
Are you a citizen?
Yeah,
are
you?
Yes.
Age?
53.
Born?
New York.
Name?
Eddie Kent. Who's asking who?
Is he? I told you wouldn't get anything out of him.
Well, I'll be running along. Don't hesitate to call on me.
Goodbye, Mr. Groot.
So long, Bug-Eye.
Bug-Eye.
Don't slam the door.
Such strange people.
Yes, I wish I could lose him instead of Snooks. Oh, poor little Snooks.
I'm terribly sorry I haven't been able to help you, Mr. Higgins. Of course, I will make an announcement on the radio, but I wish I could do something in the meantime.
Oh, you couldn't do anything. Nothing can take the place of my little girl.
Not even me?
You.
Well, I feel I've been listening to Snooks so often, I could use just as
really?
Well...
Oh, really? That's impossible.
Why, Daddy?
Oh, no! No, not that.
I want to be Snooks.
Now, how can you? You're Eddie Cantor, and Snooks is Snooks.
I want to be Snooks!
This is silly. You're not a child.
What am I?
What do you think you are?
An elephant.
You are not.
When I grow up, Daddy, can I be an elephant?
Why, of course not. Why should you want to be an elephant?
So I can squirt water through my nose.
Look, let me tell you something.
All right, I'll sit on your lap.
No.
You want to sit on my lap, Dad?
Aren't you acting a little bit silly?
Uh-huh. Of course, it's way past my bedtime, Daddy.
Well, what do you want me to do about it?
Tuck me in my little bed and put me to sleep, Daddy?
Oh, sure. I carry you up to the nursery and tuck you in bed. Anything else you want?
Yes.
What?
Kiss me.
Oh, yeah! Don't do that!
Daddy!
What?
I want to get out of bed.
What for?
You know. I'm thirsty, Daddy. I'm thirsty.
Never mind, I'm not listening.
You'll be sorry.
I'm sorry enough now. Don't bother me.
If I don't bother you and go to sleep, can I go out and play with the girls tomorrow, Daddy?
Oh, what would you be doing playing with little girls?
Who said anything about little girls?
That's the last straw. You want to be Snooks, eh?
Uh-huh.
And you want me to treat you just like I treat her?
Yeah.
Come here, dear.
Here I am, little Daddy. What do you want?
This. I'm sorry, Mr. Cantor. For a minute, I forgot myself.
You see, it did you some good. It helped you forget. And believe me, Mr. Higgins, I'll keep on trying to find your little girl. I'm going to make that radio announcement tonight.
What are you going to say?
Just this. If anybody discovers the whereabouts of Snooks, please get in touch with her daddy, Lancelot Higgins, in Sycamore Terrace. Thank you, and good night.
The first program in the series introducing the new Baby Snooks show, which will star Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks, with Hanley Stafford as Daddy, Carmen Dragon and his orchestra, and Bob Graham, vocalist. Stay tuned to this station for the adventures of the Thin Man, which follows station identification. And be sure to listen next week at the same time for another Baby Snooks show. Our guests then will be Sidney Greenstreet, Robert Benchley, and Peter Lorre. Harlow Wilcox speaking. This is CBS.
Fanny Bryce, who actually just became identified with her role as Baby Snooks over the course of 15 years in radio, with Eddie Cantor in the show there from September 16th, 1945. Stay right there for a case with Nero Wolfe. It's next as old-time radio drama continues on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Blake's will leaves everything to his daughter, including a portrait of his late wife. But what about his twin brother? How does he figure into this story? We find out in The Case of the Hasty Will, a story from The Adventures of Nero Wolfe from February 23, 1951.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ringing of that phone bell brings you mystery, adventure.
Nero Wolfe's office, Archie Goodwin speaking. Yes, who's calling? Mr. John Blake? Well, is this a matter of business? That's fine, Mr. Blake. I'll just call him.
Archie, I'm not here. Tell him I'm up in the plant room with the orchids.
I was going to call him to the phone, but he's up in the plant room with his orchids. What sort of a case is this, sir? Really, is that so?
Is it a man or a woman?
Oh, I understand perfectly. It's a man.
Well, at least that's something different.
Yes, sir. Very urgent, I understand. And I assure you, Mr. Wolfe will be here waiting for you. The fee? About $1,000?
I will not see any client until after dinner. Fritz is having mountain quail on toast.
Yes, Mr. Blake. Come at once. What were you saying, boss?
Confound you, Archie. Nothing but business. All the time. What's the problem?
I don't know. And at $1,000, considering our bank balance, I'll help him poison his great-grandmother.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's that renowned genius who is the bulkiest, balkiest, most ponderous, and most brilliant detective in the world. Yes, none other than that chair-born mass of unpredictable intellect, Nero Wolfe, created by Rex Stout and brought to you in a new series of adventures over this NBC network in the person of Mr. Sidney Greenstreet.
What we chose to refer to as the case of the hasty will began, of course, with an urgent phone call from the mysterious John Blake. At the moment, Nero Wolfe was seated in his chair, which was specially built for his 300 pounds, and I was giving him a lecture on the importance of money.
Archie, that will do. I'm not interested.
You will be when you learn you can make no more purchases of beer and Skittles. You've passed up 2-cinch cases now. Each would have meant a healthy fee. Let us hope this Mr. Blake has a nice, fat problem that will take us days to solve.
Archie!
Yes, sir?
Answer the door.
Good evening. I'm John Blake.
Oh, yes, yes. Come in, Mr. Blake. You have no idea how welcome you are.
Archie, show Mr. Blake in and close the door. That draft is unbearable.
This way, sir. Mr. Wolfe doesn't care for anything resembling air. Oh, I'm Archie Goodwin.
Good evening, Mr. Blake.
Mr. Wolfe, I have a little business for you. Now, before you say anything, I know you're not a lawyer.
I'm not a member of the bar, let us say, Mr. Blake.
Of course.
What kind of business, Mr. Blake?
I have here a short will, which I have typewritten myself. I haven't signed it yet. Also, I have here a sealed envelope containing a letter which I want you to be prepared to deliver to the addressee.
A will and a letter. Very well.
Yes. Do you know who I am?
Seems that I've certainly seen you before.
Same here. I just can't place you.
Well, I'm John Blake, president of the Plymouth Building and Loan.
Oh, of course. I've seen your picture many times.
You have a star for the best attorneys in the city, Mr. Blake, and this is most assuredly the business of attorney.
Perhaps. But in this particular instance, I wanted an individual who had no interest in me, nor previous knowledge of my affairs.
I see.
Also, I wanted a person who was, shall we say, not too well fixed.
Well, you certainly couldn't.
Archie.
Imagine Mr. Wolf being in need of money.
Just why can't your attorneys handle this?
You'll know in a moment. But when I leave here, I want you to forget the whole thing, for the time being.
Indeed. You have said it.
Here's the will. You may read it.
Archie.
January 25, 1951. To my daughter, Anita Blake, I do hereby bequeath all my property, personal and real, including the portrait painting of her mother, my dear deceased wife, Marcia Blake. This will supersedes any and all instruments previously drawn.
So, simple enough, isn't it?
That's all. Now the pen, please, and I'll sign it. Now then, you sign as witness, Mr. Goodwin. You retain the will, Mr. Wolfe, and the envelope here, which is addressed to Hillary Blake, my brother, who is now living in this city.
Your brother?
He's just recently returned from 25 years in Australia. Though Hillary has written me several times, I have not favored him. We've been estranged these many years over, a certain unpleasant situation which this enclosed letter will clear up.
Are you in fear of your life, Mr. Blake? Murder?
No, Mr. Wolfe. There was a time, yes, but, not now. You will know what to do with the will and the letter, though, when the time arrives. Now, as to your fee, you said, $1,000?
Well, we usually receive...
$1,000 will do.
Well, here's a check. All made out.
If you're thinking of suicide, Mr. Blake, we must warn you.
If you don't care to go through with this, please say so. I'm not planning on suicide, I assure you.
We have taken the job, Mr. Blake.
And good evening, gentlemen, and thank you for your kind indulgence.
Well, that's the simplest little $1,000 we ever made.
I believe, Mr. Goodwin, you're going to be quite surprised. I want you to get acquainted with John Blake's secretary. You have more than earned this $1,000, young man. Archie. Archie, is that you?
Yes, boss.
What time is it?
It is 6 p.m. The clock is right in front of your eyes.
I'm thinking, Archie, it's very interesting. Very. An entire day has passed since the visit from John Blake. Did you learn anything from Blake's secretary?
I did. He left his office late yesterday, she said. His daughter Anita is quite upset because he didn't come home.
Check his club?
Yup. I didn't talk to the daughter, but I learned that she's engaged to a young fellow named Wilbur Martin. She told the secretary that her father had been acting strangely of late, a bit morose.
And what does the daughter feel has happened?
Anita's afraid he's been kidnapped.
You haven't met nor talked to any other than the secretary?
Not yet. And so far, no one's called the police.
Good. We must, for the time being, prevent that. What did you learn of Blake's brother from Australia?
He's been here only a year. They've met only once or twice since his return. The secretary thinks the breakup was because of their love for the same woman. Hillary became very wealthy in Australia.
Very well, Archie. It is time for you to visit Miss Anita Blake at her home.
I'd love to, boss. She's a mighty purty gal.
Phooey. Archie, you can do me a great service.
Anything.
Be sure to close it tightly as you leave.
Close what?
The coal chute, of course.
I'm awfully glad you could come, Uncle Hillary. Wilbur seemed to think you might know something about Father's disappearance.
No, I don't know, Wilbur. I'm just as nonplussed as you are.
When did you see your brother last?
Oh, it's been 4 or 5 months. Why?
Well, I just wanted to know.
What do you two think has become of him? Surely you know his recent actions better than I.
Well, at first I thought he'd been kidnapped. Now I'm afraid it's suicide.
Oh, I say, really now? Have you been putting such ideas into our head, young man?
On the other hand, could have been murder.
Indeed. Well, I suggest that the police be called. The hospitals, the morgue, every place. Have you thought of doing that, young man?
I was going to.
Oh, really? Then what are you stalling about? I'll just step into the library and do it myself.
Oh, it can't be, Wilbur. It just can't be.
Miss Blake,
There's a Mr. Goodwin to see your father.
Oh, I'll see him.
Thank you, Miss Blake. I'm Archie Goodwin.
This is my fiancé, Mr. Wilbur Martin.
Mr. Martin,
how do you do?
What is it you want, Mr. Goodwin?
Is your father here, Miss Blake?
Why, no. No, he isn't.
What is your business, Mr. Goodwin? Why do you want to see Mr. Blake?
As a matter of fact, I don't really want to see Mr. Blake because I don't think he's here. I came to see Miss Blake.
Just who are you?
I'm a detective.
Police?
Private investigator with Nero Wolfe. John Blake has disappeared. I know you're trying to keep it out of the press because you think he's been kidnapped.
We have called the police.
Oh, what do you think has happened to my father?
I think he's dead.
Oh, dear. Why do you think that?
Yes. Just what do you know, Mr. Goodwin?
Oh, Anita, I want to ask you a few questions. I think it's advisable.
Mr. Blake. Yes?
I thought you were done for. That is...
I don't think I...
This chap is a detective.
I'm sorry about this, Mr. Blake, but curiosity got the better of me. I hope I haven't wrecked things.
What are you talking about?
You remember the agreement.
What agreement?
Mr. Goodwin, do you know who you're talking to?
Why, yes, John Blake.
Oh, no, Mr. Goodwin. This is my Uncle Hillary, my father's brother.
Hillary? Hillary Blake?
Yes, my father's twin brother.
John and Hillary were twins?
Of course.
Well, that's news to me. I didn't know that.
What did you know about him?
Well, now that I look at him, now that I can recall his speech, there is a difference.
And now, why do you think John Blake is dead?
I've just come from police headquarters.
You mean he's been murdered?
No. From all indications, he's committed suicide.
Suicide? Oh, are you sure?
Poor father. Oh, I was afraid of this.
This morning, a hat and an overcoat were found on the East River docks near Pier 9. In the coat was a typewritten copy of a will made yesterday. The hat bears the initials J.B.
There was a will?
Yes. Could you identify the hat and coat, Miss Blake?
Well, yes, of course.
Very well. Come in, Sergeant. This is Sergeant Hanlon. Miss Blake, do you recognize this coat and hat?
Yes. Oh, yes, I do. They were father's. Wilbur.
Suicide? I can't understand it.
But the hat and coat are not conclusive evidence. What about the will found in the pocket?
Show them the will, Sergeant. Read it, miss.
You read it, Wilbur.
To my daughter, Anita Blake, I do hereby bequeath all my property, personal and real, including the portrait painting of her mother, my dear deceased wife, Marcia Blake. This will supersedes any and all instruments previously drawn. But no signature.
I have the original. Here you are.
Where did you get this?
Notice the signature of the witness?
Archie Goodwin. You witnessed his signature?
In Nero Wolfe's office.
But Mr. Blake had his own attorneys.
Nevertheless, he came to Mr. Wolfe to take care of the will. If we hadn't recognized him from his photos in the papers, I wouldn't have witnessed the signature.
Anita, is this your father's handwriting?
Yes. Yes, it's his, all right.
But this still isn't proof that he's dead, nor that he committed suicide. No corpus delicti.
And the body may not be found for days. But this evidence we have here certainly indicates that a body will be found eventually.
Maybe not, Mr. Goodwin. It's possible they could have...
What were you going to say?
Nothing.
Miss Blake, in a way, I blame myself for your father's death.
How do you mean?
I had a sort of premonition. It's obvious now why he came to Nero Wolfe.
Is it?
He wanted someone who didn't know him personally. His own attorneys would have been able to see through his plan and prevent his carrying it out.
But he made a will. Why did he draw this new one?
Yes, that's what I don't understand.
Well, I still am not convinced that he committed suicide.
Mr. Blake, here is a letter he asked to be delivered to you.
Oh, well, now.
Perhaps it will shed some light on the problem.
What does it say, Uncle?
Jove. It says, Hillary, 25 years now, jealousy and bitterness have kept us apart. I know why you stayed in Australia all these years. I know you loved Marcia. She was rightfully yours. But I loved her, too, and I couldn't go on without her. I know you've despised us both, and I've pretended to despise you. I had to pretend, because I lied to Marcia. I told her you were engaged to marry a woman in Sydney. Marcia was innocent. I was to blame. When Marcia died last year, and you wrote that you were coming back, I knew then that your resentment had faded, but I didn't answer you, and I've kept away from you because I couldn't face you. I've told you all this because things have happened, which you will learn soon enough, that have decided me to close my book and write Finney. I have made a new will, leaving everything I possess to Anita. Anita is young, Hillary, and I beg you to watch after her as though she were your own, which, but for my selfishness, she might well have been. Forgive me, Hillary. Well, this certainly indicates suicide.
But what does he mean by things have happened?
That, Miss Blake, is the motive, for which we'll just have to wait.
Yes, for that and the body.
Well, boss, up here in the conservatory a bit early, aren't you? How are the orchids?
Oh, it's a nice sunny morning. Even though it is around zero outside, the sun is fine for them. And behold, Archie.
Huh? What is it?
The Dendrobium chlorostel.
Yes, indeed. What about it?
Showing two buds. Most encouraging.
Indeed, indeed so. Boss, I can't take the steam heat here.
Tell me, this painting of Marcia Blake, is it large? It
hangs over the Blake mantle, about 3 by 4 feet.
I find it most intriguing that John Blake should mention the painting in so short a will. And Hillary, does he seem to offer any suggestion on this problem?
He has very little to say. Wilbur has definite ideas, and he's in there pitching all the time. He has a rather unpleasant way about him, though.
You have talked with Inspector Kramer?
I have.
And asked Miss Anita and Hillary to meet you at the morgue to look at the body?
Right. And I left Wilbur out of this gathering.
This body is practically unidentifiable, huh?
In Kramer's opinion, it is.
After you're finished down there, I'd like to have a chat with this Wilbur Martin.
Okay, but you'll get nothing out of him. I've tried.
Archie, you're becoming so conceited. Soon I fear I'll have to fire you.
If it were summer, I would forthwith resign.
Run along and close our coal chute behind you.
Morning, Inspector Kramer. Up early.
Yeah, Goodwin. I'd just love to come down to this morgue.
This is Miss Anita Blake and her uncle Hillary Blake.
How do you do?
How do you do? Good morning, Mr. Goodwin. I hope you don't object too much to my joining the proceedings.
Oh, I know, Wilbur. I suppose it's all right.
Please, Mr. Goodwin, what's happened?
There's a body here, rather badly bruised and cut and in a bad condition, but I think you should look at it.
Oh,
I'm sorry, Miss Blake, but I'm afraid it's necessary.
Well, very well. I'll be all right.
I'd like to come along.
Oh, yes, Wilbur, you must.
Well, come on. This way. Well, here we are.
Wilbur. Oh.
What do you say, Miss Blake?
Now get hold of yourself, Anita. Please, you must.
Yes. Yes, that's Father.
And you, Mr. Blake?
It's certainly hard to say. It looks as though it might be John. Was there no means of identification on the body? No jewelry or...
Father never wore any jewelry.
There was nothing but this suit here. Nothing in the pockets.
Yes. That's Father's suit, all right. I know. Oh, why? Why did he do it?
Come along now. That's all for today. Mr. Wolf, this is Mr. Wilbur Martin.
Ah, yes. How do you do, Mr. Martin? Sit down.
Thank you, sir.
No. Take the red leather chair. That's right.
So glad you could come. Archie, beer for us. Tell me, Mr. Martin, you saw the body?
I did. Whether it was John Blake or not, I'm not sure. But Anita feels positive enough.
You are skeptical about the suicide theory, eh?
Well, yes, I am.
Are you trying to cast suspicion on someone else?
No.
He thinks he was murdered.
I do.
But not by you, of course.
Certainly not.
But who would know that John came here, signed the will, and gave us the letter to his brother? He must have contemplated suicide, don't you think?
Are you positive it was John Blake who signed the will?
How interesting. You think it was his brother Hillary who came here, posing as John, huh?
It could have been.
But the man was quite gray and had no Australian accent.
Hillary could have dropped the accent for a short while and grayed his hair, and they were twins.
So enlightening, Mr. Martin. Do go on.
After he left you here, he could have killed John and thrown him in the river, and left his overcoat and hat on the wharf.
And why would Hillary kill John?
Well, there may have been several reasons. Maybe because of Marcia. Well, several reasons.
Tell me, did John Blake object to your engagement to Anita?
No, why should he?
I don't know. Amelia asked. Anita Blake identified her father's handwriting. She identified the body. You still believe it's murder?
Maybe she only thought it was his handwriting.
You had best be careful, Wilbur. In trying to make a murder out of this, you might place yourself in a most unhappy position.
I checked the letter and the will with papers at John's office, and the handwriting is identical, in my opinion.
Maybe Hillary is clever at forgery.
Maybe.
Did you have the experts check the writing?
Not yet.
Then how can you tell unless you had a bona fide sample of Hillary's writing?
I take it that you found a sample of Hillary's writing? Some letters from Hillary to John?
Yes. I found a package of them in John's desk at his home.
That, Wilbur, is most encouraging.
Here they are. Several of them tied together. Some written in 1928 and a couple in 1948.
Now we'll tell you something. We never thought John committed suicide either.
You didn't?
No. And before you go, Wilbur, write your name here on this pad.
Very well.
Thank you so much. I hope we shall see you tomorrow. Well, I'm surprised, Inspector Kramer, to see you out in such inclement weather.
I like the cold spells.
Sit in the red leather chair.
Thanks.
Good. Have your experts finished checking the will and the letter?
Yep. But not all through with a package of Hillary's old letters that Wilbur found.
What's the verdict?
If this is forgery, it's the cleverest bit of forgery we've ever come across. My men say the will and the letter you received appear identical with the specimens from John's office.
Indeed. The will and the letter then do seem to have been written by John Blake.
Yes. But on the other hand, and this is unusual, by comparing this letter from John with a letter Hillary wrote from Australia in 1948, we found characteristics in both men's letters which were definitely similar.
Then, Inspector, you feel that Hillary might have written the letter and signed the will. That it was Hillary who came to my office?
It's a tough thing to prove, but I think that's being on the right track.
Inspector, what about the rest of the package of letters I got from Wilbur Martin?
They're still working on those down at headquarters.
What about young Wilbur?
So far, can't see much in him to worry about, but it's a bit early.
Archie, phone out to the Blake Mansion and tell Wilbur Martin that we've uncovered the whole thing. And if Wilbur's in on it, he'll be gone before you get there. We can pick him up later.
Okay. I'll let you know about the rest of Hillary's letters.
Good. We won't phone out there until you're finished.
And I'll call you as soon as possible.
Archie, I want you to look into the affairs of the Plymouth Building and Loan Company. See what you can learn about the actual stability of the company.
Okay. Boss, please put on your muffler and overcoat and open a window. A candle couldn't burn in this place. Yeah. I'm on my way.
Anita!
What is it, Wilbur? What's happened?
I came out as soon as I heard.
Well, what's happened? Speak up, man.
You haven't heard? You don't know?
Know what?
Look at these headlines.
Plymouth Building and Loan crashes. Wilbur, what does this mean?
It means your father embezzled the funds of the company and he has gone to the wall.
What?
Yes, close the doors.
Oh, no, Wilbur, no, I can't believe such a thing.
I'm sorry, Anita, but there it is in black and white.
Then this is the motive for John's suicide.
Why?
Why? Because he knew he was caught. What else?
He could have put the money back, couldn't he?
Yes, but maybe he lost it by trying to make more to cover up the shortage.
I don't think he lost it.
You don't?
No.
Oh, nonsense, he must have. Else why would he kill himself?
Maybe he didn't kill himself.
Oh, this is awful.
Oh, please, Anita, you mustn't worry. I know this is very embarrassing for you, but it isn't your fault. Now, let me take you away for a while. We can run down to Mexico until this blows over.
You won't take her to Mexico. You won't take her anyplace.
Just what do you mean?
What's wrong with you, Wilbur? You're acting stupid.
Your father may have fleeced the company, but I don't believe he lost the money.
Wilbur.
He hid the money, and your Uncle Hillary found the hiding place. And he set up the suicide to cover your father's murder. Hillary killed him.
Oh, you're crazy. You're out of your mind.
Why, this doesn't make sense. I have all the money I need.
Yes, you have now.
Pack your things, Anita. I'll phone the airport for reservations.
You can't leave at a time like this. You won't leave this room.
Do you know what can be done to you for threatening people with firearms? I'll call the police.
You don't need to call the police. I've just talked to that detective, Mr. Goodwin. He's on his way here. The police have uncovered everything. I know you killed John, and you have the money.
Wilbur, you're out of your mind.
I know what I'm talking about.
Get out of here. Get out!
I won't leave. No one will leave till Goodwin comes.
Archie, come in, Miss Blake. Mr. Blake, Mr. Martin, glad you were all able to accept my invitation. You too, Inspector Kramer.
I know how glad you are I could be here, Wolf.
Please be seated, folks. Hillary was going to Mexico on the next plane and taking Anita with him.
Mexico?
John Blake stole the money from the company, but Hillary found out about it and killed him.
Mr. Wolf, this is utter nonsense.
Mr. Blake, Inspector Kramer's handwriting experts have examined the will and the letter left with me. They've also checked them with your recent letters from Australia.
Indeed.
And your letters from Australia show a definite resemblance, having the same characteristics as the letter and the will you give me.
You mean you think that I signed the will and wrote the letter?
Definitely.
Ridiculous.
But there's something else. The will mentions a painting of Marcia Blake, Anita's mother. Archie, where is that painting? Did you bring it?
It's here.
Bring it in here, Sergeant.
Just a moment.
I hope you don't mind, Miss Blake.
What are you doing to it?
Tearing off the paper backing of the picture.
Yes, and there you are. There's the reason for the whole thing.
Bonds. Pasted in the back. Thousands of dollars in negotiable bonds. Then Hillary did know about the money. He killed John for all this. He had Anita order the picture to be credited for shipping.
I did no such thing.
Nevertheless, you didn't kill John Blake.
Certainly he did.
Look at these two letters from Hillary Blake to John here in America. What are the dates?
September and November 1948.
Those were supposedly Hillary's most recent letters to John. And look at these letters, June and July 1928. Notice any difference?
All are signed by Hillary, but the ones dated 1928 are not at all like the ones written in 1948.
Not the least similarity. The ones dated 1928 were written by Hillary. But those dated 1948 were written by John.
By John? How do you mean?
Carry on, Inspector.
You're under arrest, Mr. Blake. Not for murder, because there's been no murder. You're under arrest on a charge of embezzlement.
Embezzlement? Oh, but how can you...
And you, Miss Blake, are under arrest as an accomplice.
What? I don't understand. Mr. Wolf.
Wilbur, you yourself unearthed the old 1928 letters, rarely written by Hillary from Australia. The recent letters are not in the same handwriting. They were poorly forged by John in 1948. Furthermore, we checked with Australia and learned that Hillary Blake died in Sydney 10 years ago.
And this man here is really John Blake posing as Hillary to escape the penalty for looting the company.
Anita, it just doesn't seem possible.
Anita knew all about it, and they might have gotten away with it if they hadn't come to us, Archie.
What a fantastic plan.
I'm giving you back your $1,000, Mr. Blake, but I'm afraid it won't do either of you much good now. Thank you so much, Inspector Kramer, for dropping in.
Well, boss, that was a clever bit of deduction.
You really think so, Archie? It was quite a blunder for so clever a man as John Blake.
Why did he make the mistake of coming to us?
There are many holes in the plans of the criminal mind. He must have forgotten about the 1928 letters, or he would have destroyed them.
And he underestimated Wilbur's intelligence. And I thought he was a dope, too. But he was half right.
He really slipped up on the body in the morgue. Inspector Kramer was most kind to cooperate with us in that little act. Anita was too eager to identify the first body she saw.
And the painting. You sensed there was more importance attached to it than the fact that it was a work of art.
True. Some beer, please, Archie.
Coming up, boss?
Now, that brings me to an unpleasant subject.
What's that?
You were talking about resigning. Are you still in that frame of mind?
Resigning? When did I say anything like that?
Then you're going to be content with conditions as they are?
Why, of course. What are you saying?
And you don't mind it a bit as long as this dreadful weather continues?
Well, not at all. Don't mind what?
Going in and out of the house through the coal chute.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolf, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story by John Edison was based on the characters created by Rex Stout and produced and directed by J. Donald Wilson. In tonight's cast were Harry Bartell as Archie Goodwin, and Victor Rodman, Louise Arthur, Hal Gerard, and Bill Johnstone. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you The Case of the Disappearing Diamonds. Don Stanley speaking.
Sometimes a picture is not just a picture. Sometimes, at least in this particular case, the case of the hasty will, it has bonds pasted in the back of it. And the crime, not one of murder, but mere embezzlement. And faked death from Mr. John Blake. In the case of the hasty will from February 23, 1951. Well, the mysteries are a lot shorter in You Bet Your Life. Question and answer. But, of course, the biggest mystery is where will the mind of Groucho Marx take you on the way from question to answer? We'll find out right after this as old-time radio drama continues this Saturday night here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.